Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Eddie Trunk Podcast is on the air or on your download or on your device or on your stream or however the hell you're listening, however you're connecting and getting the podcast, it's on. And thanks for listening. Welcome, everybody, to another week. Of course, that great guitar music there that you hear at the open of every show, courtesy of my friend Mark Slaughter. We thank him for that. And we've got another big, big triple-headed Eddie Trunk Podcast for you, which, of course, new ones post every Thursday via podcastone.com and iTunes. And, of course, like all the interviews you hear during the podcast, they originate and happen live on my show on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, which is called Trunk Nation. If you have Sirius XM, listen every day live Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time. Replay every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Always on demand as well on the Sirius XM app. Get involved in the show. Listen on channel 106. You get a little taste, just a tiny taste here on the weekly podcast of what we do every day there on Volume. So I hope you join me. If you don't have Sirius XM, look into it and hope you guys will come on board and join us for it. So anyway, here we go. Getting ready to fire up three interviews for you, all of which came from the same show. It was a show that I did in Houston, Texas, exactly a week ago. I had a great time in Houston. I was there for a private appearance, hosting a private event, actually. And while I was there, I had a chance to interview some people that were also playing the private event. Those people included Dee Snider, Robert Mason, who's the current singer in Warrant, and also Stephen Piercy of Rat. Want to thank everybody at the House of Blues in Houston who came down and hung out with me last week and sat in on some of these broadcasts that were done with a live studio audience at the House of Blues. Want to thank all the guests who dropped by and joined me for it. And it was fun hosting the private gig that night on that Thursday night. And then Friday night hosted a show that was a public show with Piercy that he played at a club called Tumbleweeds in Houston. So it was really a good couple of days in Houston. Got a lot of work done and saw a lot of cool people and got to hang out with a lot of cool people. And like I said, got to have a great show of Trunk Nation with three guests dropping by. And it's kind of interesting what happened because the show, as you're about to hear with each guest, sort of ramped up where things started out with Stephen Piercy, who is a great guy and all, but he's always a, you know, kind of laid back, typical sort of Southern California, cool, chill sort of guy. So he starts the conversation off talking about Rat, talking about solo stuff. Then it shifts to Robert Mason, who is an old friend. He sang with Lynch Mob, sang with Cry of Love. Like I said, he's been in Warrant now, two studio records with them. An old friend from Jersey. So we have a great chat with him, and then he brings it up a notch. Tells a great story about his time singing off stage for Ozzy Osbourne. And then we close out with Dee Snider shot out of a cannon. I mean, Dee brought it like he always brings it. And we talked about all sorts of stuff in like a whirlwind 20 minutes that you will not soon forget. So this was really a lot of fun, and I thought I'd bring you for this week's podcast the entire show, pretty much. I mean, not exactly what happened. Again, if you have SiriusXM, you heard this live, and you can hear the entire show. But the interview portions of that show that I will bring to you exactly how they rolled out in Houston a week ago for this week's podcast. And a lot of it's very timely, and a lot of it's fun, and a lot of it's interesting, and I hope you guys enjoy listening to it as much as I enjoy doing it. And again, I hope you join me every day on Volume for a lot more content, discussion, calls, and all that sort of good stuff as well. So we're already getting close to the end of August here. I know in some parts of the country, kids are back to school already. Here in New Jersey, the kids don't go back until after Labor Day, so they get out later and go back a little bit later. But man, the summer blew by, getting ready for football season. Can't wait for that. Got some appearances coming up. September 16th, Irisburg, Vermont. Big festival happening there, Shrinedom. It's a charity event for the Shriners Hospital. And it features Warrant and Firehouse and Lita Ford. And added to that bill recently, Vince Neil and Slaughter, amongst others. So get ready for that if you're in Vermont, September 16th. I'll see you there for that. Also, the DO Cancer Fund bowling event is coming up. That's October 6th at Pins in Studio City. Always fun to host that. Look forward to seeing you there. Come down and support a great cause if you are in that area of the country. As usual, all of my appearances as they get closer and as they are confirmed are on the homepage of eddietrunk.com. Be sure to follow on social media as well, at eddietrunk. Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. So let's get to it, because we got a lot to get into this week with three guests over the course of this podcast. We'll go with Piercy, talking Rat, talking solo stuff, segued into Robert Mason, some great Aussie stories, some great stories about Warrant and much more, and his relationship with Janie Lane, who, of course, he replaced in the band. And then we transition into Dee Snider. And I asked Dee exactly why he's making records and still playing live shows all over the place when he decided he wanted to end Twisted Sister, and what that's all about. Stick around and you'll get his answer shortly as well. So it's a great Eddie Trunk podcast this week, a three-headed monster coming your way. We'll get into it right after this.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, are you guys hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Well, with ZipRecruiter, they can help you out. ZipRecruiter can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. And then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job. Because, of course, you want the right people, right? And ZipRecruiter does that better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of the jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails, calls to your office. You simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. So find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used to by businesses, I should say, of all sizes, you can use ZipRecruiter. Find out the most qualified job candidates, get immediate results. Right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/trunk, T-R-U-N-K. That's ZipRecruiter.com/trunk. One more time. Try it for free. What do you got to lose? ZipRecruiter.com/trunk.
HBO's Game of Thrones is back for its seventh season. Winter is finally here, and so are the White Walkers. Will the Seven Kingdoms of Westeros survive the threat from the North, or will they fall in the looming war for the Iron Throne? After you're done watching an episode, join the discussion here on the Game of Thrones After Show on Podcast One. Every week, our hosts discuss each episode in detail, from shocking twists to fan theories, as the series chronicles the violent struggle among the realm's noble families for ultimate power. Join the fray every week on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, we're back with the Eddie Trunk Podcast. We now go to the House of Blues in Houston, where I was exactly a week ago, last Thursday, to do my volume radio show from that building. And I had three guests drop by. We started with a conversation with Stephen Piercy, who was there to play. All the artists you're about to hear were there to play a private show at the House of Blues that night. Piercy also had his own public solo show the following day. So we begin the conversation with the voice of Rat, Stephen Piercy, on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Two old friends here to my left, the voice of Rat, Mr. Stephen Piercy. Good to see you, brother.
How are you, my friend?
I'm very good. And to my right, we have a man that I go back decades with, a fellow Jersey brother, even though he's not even Jersey anymore because he's lived in Arizona so long.
And I was born in the Bronx, so it's kind of, I spent that middle period in New Jersey.
Yeah, that's, come yeah, on, so. Man. We got to, you know.
Let's I was just specific.
Talking. I lose my cred?
You lose your cred, although I just had Mark Tornillo on the show the other day.
I knew that.
And he mentioned you because I said to him, you know, he's a replacement guy in Accept. And I said, how have you been able to handle, you know, being the guy that replaced a well-known guy? Did you ever reach out to any other singers and talk to them and commiserate about how difficult that can be? And he goes, I had some conversations with Robert Mason.
Yeah.
In a positive way, you know, all good
well,
stuff.
Well, Mark and I know each other about as long as you and I know each other, so yeah.
And he's done an amazing job fronting Accept.
Every time they're, actually, I text him a few times a year just to give him those little affirmations of, damn, dude, right on.
Yeah, and
proud
as,
of you.
As you've done an amazing job fronting
it.
Warren.
Thank you.
And a little different circumstances for you, because obviously.
Accept does not have a song called Cherry Pie, to the best of my recollection. That is correct. There are differences.
Can you imagine Accept doing a Accept should do a cover of Cherry Pie.
I'm bringing
Pie.
Mark up next
That's
time.
That's a great
in.
Idea.
That could actually sound okay with Udo if it was Udo.
That could be a pretty cool idea. Could you imagine Accept doing Cherry Pie like a real
I'm texting Mark
up
as
version?
With Udo. He's like alienated, isn't he?
I know.
He's doing his own All Accept tour. Mm. Udo is doing...
Except he's not an Accept.
He's not accepted?
I'm just... Thank you. I'm here all day.
Like I said, let the shenanigans
but
begin.
He's the boy. All right.
Steven.
Yes, sir.
First of all...
What? I didn't do it.
Congratulations on all these killer shows you've been doing with Rat.
Thank you.
I mean, you've done some big stuff, some big festivals, including you were out of the country playing recently, right?
Yeah, it was amazing.
Where was that at?
To, what was that gig called? I couldn't tell you. It's out of my head. We've just been gone, you know.
What country were you in?
Tell me. I don't know. I'd have to look. I just get on the boat, plane, bus, whatever, and go.
Did Rat back in the day do a lot of stuff outside of America? Because I don't tend to remember you guys going out of the country much.
No, we've done Monsters of Rock with like Iron Maiden and certain bands, and we really didn't. We stayed in Japan. It's like the Van Halen schematic, you know, until you figure out, hey, or whoever's controlling the boat.
So it was predominantly back in the day focused on America and Japan.
Yeah, and every now and then a festival.
How many times did you go to Japan?
Oh, God, every year. God, we spent like 3 weeks there one tour. Just playing everywhere and anywhere in Nagoya, Osaka, Hiroshima, Tokyo, you just name it. You're just gone.
Why do you think the Japanese took to Rat so much, do you think?
Hopefully music, but, you know, they loved Robin because he was like this blonde giant over there. So he got quite a reputation, you know. They loved him out there.
How's it feel to be playing with these guys again with all the stuff that's gone on with Rat? A well-documented drama, no need to rehash it again. But now you've got the band.
Yeah.
You guys are out there. You played huge shows. You played M3. You played Rocklahoma. You played Rockfest. You've gone outside of the country. You're playing on a regular basis. How's it feel? How's the chemistry?
It's good. It's getting your feet wet. It's the same bicycle. Just learn how to ride it again. You know, we're having a good time. You know, it's just trying to do the right shows to, you know, reestablish the footing, you know. So we stopped September at Sturgis was our last show. On the 8th.
Which was just like a week ago.
Yeah, a week ago or so. And we're gearing up for the next year. We want some time to do it properly. Talking about a record, we'll see what happens. It's been many years. And I've got the rest of my solo stuff to do, which tomorrow we're at Tumbleweeds with you and
Bullet Boys
and stuff here in Houston. And, I have a handful of shows, and it's all great. Solo shows for Smash. The record's really done cool, and we're happy. I'll end up doing another one. So we'll see.
Yeah, I know you put a lot into doing the solo record. I know you're very proud of it. Steven's new album, which is out now, is called Smash, and there's some great stuff on it. I remember a while ago, you sent me a song that's on Smash now, I Can't Take It, which was a great song, which totally had a real sort of rat vibe to it.
Well, it's also Bo Hill in there.
You brought Bo to work on that, right?
Yeah, he did that mix and mastering and stuff. And that's what I had to step up to when he wasn't available to do the record. So that's why we took as long as we did.
Right.
To make sure it was like, oh, shit, you got to step up to this. Okay, let's go. And we did.
Yeah. So what's the biggest difference for you going out as you are now? You're out in solo band mode, and you've got your solo band. Mm. You still play rat songs with your solo band, right?
Sure, sure.
So how does it change for you?
It's just a different sound, different breed of animal, because I can play solo stuff, which I do, or I can play a Zep tune, a Priest tune, whatever turns me on at that moment, Rat's its own machine, It's where my solo thing is more aggressive and let me go beat your ass,
And you're down and dirty. I mean, Rat, we just talked about, you played to some huge shows and some huge festivals and on bigger stages. Mm. With this band going out there solo, you're getting in the clubs, you're getting in smaller places.
No, we've actually done some good shows. We just did a festival somewhere, a street thing. It was like 30,000 people out there. It was amazing,
But it's a different beast. So
totally.
You can kind of get down a little more down and dirty in 100%. Front and connect with the audience.
All bands fear to go. You're afraid, we're not.
Where's the craziest place you went with it?
Everywhere. We always make a place. Fucked up.
Who's in the solo band now?
Right now, it's still Eric. Frankie is back. He's going to miss a show here. Eric, obviously. Matt Thorne on bass. Old
from Rough Cuff.
Mickey Rat Rough Cuff alumni. And,
right.
And right now we have Scotty Coogan from Ace Frehley doing drums.
Who is also a great singer.
Yeah. Well, he was in my solo band a while ago.
Was he?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
For quite a while, yeah.
The Coogie Monster. He can sing, man.
He's a great singer.
He's got some pipes on him as well. I've seen him. I mean, he sings lead on some of the stuff with Ace,
that Zep cover band he had was great.
Yeah.
Three piece, and he sang. Come on.
Yeah.
How weird is that?
Yeah, it is pretty weird. We can grab a call or two if you guys. I think my phone screening thing is working, but I'm not sure. We'll try to, if it is working, I'll try to put up a call for Steven as we're talking a little bit about Rat, and we're talking a little bit about his solo career and, of course, his solo album, which is out there now, again, called Smash. If you're in the Houston area, Steven Piercy's solo band playing tomorrow here in Houston at Tumbleweeds. And Bullet Boys are also on the bill. I'll be down there as well and get the tickets at the door right up till showtime. And I think, didn't you, if they just go and mention my name, you're going to let them in? Is that what? All right, how about that for the people listening? If you want to go down to the show tomorrow night, go to the front door and say Eddie Trunk, and that'll get you in. Most places, that'll get you punched in the face.
That's a switch. It's got me thrown out of a couple of joints.
Exactly. Most places, that won't get you a cracker.
You know who?
But go to Tumbleweeds tomorrow if you're here in Houston and say my name, and they're going to let you in the door to hang out with us.
Say my name.
So, Rat done for the rest of the year then?
Yeah. We're regrouping and preparing for next year, which is going to take time. Because, like I say, there's a record we're talking about, and see what happens. But we have to regroup and, prepare for the next assault.
Do you feel like you've successfully kind of reestablished what the band is right now? And did you feel you had to get out there and really let people know that this version of the band was out there?
To a small extent. People know who we are. I don't, but we did want to go out and do some festivals, the big shows, and then other shows just started coming at us, So we just you know, try to keep things into perspective. But no, I think the story's told. It's over and done. Paige, psh, you know, if you want another nail on the coffin, we can do that too. But it's all good. It's copacetic, man.
What about the fan reaction? Tell me about what, tell me about what you heard from fans when you got back out there, started doing it.
What I hear from who I hear, it's great. People are having a good time. You know, we're very tight. We're tight out there. You know, you don't get Juan and myself and Warren with Nucleus and not be tight. It can be loosely tight sometimes, but we're having fun, you know. Some songs just hit it off, you know. It's a good thing, you know. It's like going, I remember then, you know, so it's good.
Are you one of these guys, I mean, I've talked about this all the time, Rat had and has so many amazing songs, such an incredible catalog. I think people sometimes forget the amount of hits you guys had, how you lived on MTV, and a plethora of huge songs. For you, singing them live all these decades, and now singing them in 2017, do you have highlights? Do you have things? Like, I know for me as a fan, I love when you play Body Talk. I love when I hear Back for More.
Same.
Lack of Communication, I love.
I get off Lay It Down.
Lay It Down.
You're in Love. What you just mentioned.
Body Talk.
Body Talk. I love that tune. There's certain songs that just want to make you kick some ass, you know.
Yeah.
And those are a few of my best.
And what about, you were doing In Your Direction, weren't you?
Yeah, we still are. We were. It was weird how we just, you know, I get involved with the set list, you know, I like to see the system from them, and then I go through it, and if it's fine, I just go, this is great. You know, Direction, you know, I wish we would do Trouble, You're in Trouble. And,
oh, that's a great one,
you know,
too.
Other songs. You know, Insane. I mean, that's another song that I just
I think
love.
I saw you I do Your Insane.
I love to play that song.
Yeah.
It's Robin all the way, you know.
Who picks the set list in Rat? Who has, I mean, as this usually it defaults to the singer, which would be you, but is it a group thing, or who writes it out?
I don't care. I just point out what I don't like.
You exit.
You know, give me whatever. I don't really give a shit, you know.
Can you give us one you don't like that pops up on the list and you veto?
Yeah, Nobody Rides.
You don't like that one?
No, it ends up being fun halfway through the bottle, but, you know, it's just one of those songs that just doesn't, eh.
Point Break soundtrack, right?
Yeah, it's good.
That was
it's
on the point?
It's a great song, but, you know.
It doesn't work live.
I just kind of go, okay, I want to kick it up a notch.
And speaking of the current lineup of Rat, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
How's Jimmy DeGrasso worked out? As your drummer.
He's sat in pretty well there. He's a good, you know, he's a great guy, obviously, and he's a good drummer. Like I say, next year is a whole other ball game. All I know is we have the Nucleus and Carlos, and we just have to concentrate on other things now, the business and the new record. And then what I do after that is, you know, a whole other story, but I'm just finishing out the Smash year and take it from there. So it should be great in your next year.
Do you think it's important for Rat to make a new record? I mean, a lot of people really loved Infestation. I know some of you guys felt that it could be bettered now, looking back on
it. I do, too.
What would you really like to do it for the history and the legacy of the band, make another record?
I just make records. I have my own record label for a reason. I just love making records.
Yeah.
I think a record, whether people buy it or not, it's still this story, you know. Otherwise, we can whip out singles all day long. Warren and I have been writing, you know, so we can do it all day, every day. But a record and a concept, you know, is to me still important.
Yeah.
Know?
Let me ask you one more thing before I...
That's why Smash is available on vinyl.
Yeah, it is. Before I let you can hang, or before I wrap up with you, one other thing I wanted to ask you about, I was curious about this. A book came out recently, Running with the Devil, which was written by Van Halen's manager.
Right.
Started out as tour manager. Mm. And he talks in the book about Van Halen was originally, before when he was the tour manager, before he became the manager, Van Halen was managed by Marshall Burl.
Correct.
And he says correct, about some really crazy things about Marshall Burl in that book.
Mm.
He says that Marshall Burl shot video of David Lee Roth having sex with groupies and sent it to the Warner Brothers secretaries. He said Marshall Burl showed total disinterest in Van Halen, which is why he became their manager, because he really didn't care. Marshall Burrow was your manager during the heyday of Rat.
Years, yeah, till 83 to 87 or 8, I believe. But he was great. I wish those are true stories about him sending those tapes.
Because
he's a tripper, man, and meeting, you know, as we met Milton Berle through him and putting our videos. I mean, that's some unique folk right there.
Yeah, you
know?
Of course.
That's Hollywood stuff, you know. So it was fun. So I hope it's true. But I don't know Monk like that, but I know Marshall. And we used to have great fun on the road, let me tell you, with him.
How did he end up becoming your manager? What was the connection? Because the way they painted, he had no interest in really managing Van Halen, so you would think he didn't have an interest in managing rock acts, but then he got with you guys. And
do you remember that Van Halen show, Day on the Green, where they flew in on the
helicopter
parachutes and whatever? That was Marshall's idea, so go figure. All right, anyway. So all I know is we were like, doing our bit. I got us into certain places managing the band, and then he saw us one night and he went, you know, I've been here before, obviously, the whiskey, and he made us an offer. You guys want to do an EP? And we said yes, of course, and that's how it started, you know?
I just found it fascinating that this guy allegedly showed no interest in really caring about Van Halen.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all.
I found it hard to believe, too, but they say Noel says that's how he ended up becoming the manager after 2 years, because the guy was largely absent.
I was around then. I knew what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, before I knew Marshall, you know. So I wouldn't know that aspect of it, but I doubt it. Marshall's a worker. He's not. I don't know. But I don't know Monk.
So Marshall has no Stephen Piercy sex tapes anywhere that he's sitting on?
Probably not. Maybe. Who knows? I don't know. Put them out.
A bonus disc in the special deluxe edition of Smash.
Yeah.
You get a Stephen Piercy sex tape.
There you go. A little chip. You can...
Oh, man. Well, again, everybody check out Stephen doing his thing with his solo band. And if you're in Houston, you can see him tomorrow here in Houston at Tumbleweeds with the Bullet Boys. That's always a fun show and a fun double bill. How many more solo dates for the rest of the year?
We have about six more. So if you go to my website, stephen-piercy.com, the tour dates are right there in the front. And have at it, you know.
And the Top Fuel World, what do you got cooking?
Well, I'm going to get the label fired up again here real quick, but we're actually concentrating on what's going down with Solo and the band Rat and stuff. And we're looking forward to a ass-kicking 18.
Yeah, you were one of the earlier guys, man, that I ever remember in the hard rock world doing their own record label and doing their own production company like you have with Top Fuel. I thought that was you were a little ahead of the curve on that.
Well, I did it in 95 because I knew things were slowing down there after the arcade thing. I saw everything kind of got goofy, and I was like writing songs for movies and stuff, right? NHRA and that. So I decided just to create something that I can do. And you know, like Smash, I license it out, and that's what I do, you know.
Right. Well, it's very
it's
cool.
All good.
Yeah, it's all good. It's good to see you busy. It's good to see Rat doing their thing, and I hope you guys do another record, because I think that Infestation, a lot of people thought that was a solid record, and I'm really curious to see where that all goes. I think it's awesome what you got. The shows I've seen that you've done have been awesome. Thanks to Stephen Piercy. Our first of three guests live from the House of Blues on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. We got to take a break. We'll come back and be joined by Robert Mason, the singer of Warrant, next.
This is the Eddie Trunk podcast.
Well, I've been telling you guys about Blue Apron for a while, and we truly do love it here at the Trunk household. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country, and there's a reason for that, because Blue Apron has incredibly high standards. They do an amazing job. Partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S., so they've got great, great quality food. Great beef, chicken, pork, fish. It's all from great sources, great quality, great taste. It's fun. You get these great recipes. Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, so you're reducing food waste as well. And it really is tremendous. You get to cook with your family. You get all sorts of great recipes that change all the time. You can tweak the things that you want. For those that spend a lot of money at restaurants or at high-end grocery chains, try this out. You can spend under $10 per person for a delicious meal you make yourself with great quality products via Blue Apron. Some upcoming meals include basil pesto chicken with summer vegetable panzanella, meatball pizza with fresh mozzarella cheese and charmed tomatoes, whole grain pasta, summer vegetables, heirloom tomato caprese salad. Man, sounds good, right? It's really a lot of fun. My kids love when that box shows up. They get to dig into it, pull all those ingredients out, look at the recipes, and cook away. Check out this week's menu. And listen to this. You can get your first three meals free with free shipping, totally free. Go to blueapron.com/EddieTrunk. EddieTrunk. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. BlueApron.com/EddieTrunk. BlueApron.com/EddieTrunk. Blue Apron, you know it, a better way to cook.
Hey, have you heard? Podcast One has a whole bunch of awesome new shows filled with big names that are waiting for you on our brand new amazing app. This one's a game changer. There's Norman Lear talking to Amy Poehler, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Charles Barkley. Geffen Playhouse Unscripted with Bryan Cranston, Josh Gad, and soon Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
OC Real Housewife Heather Dubrow's World. Lady Gang's Three Mimosa Podcast with Leah Michelle, Nelly Furtado, Elle King, and more. Plus every episode of The Adam Carolla Show, Dan Patrick, and Rich Eisen. And if you like what happens in the ring, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Chael Sonnen, and a whole bunch more. So download our one-of-a-kind new app and see for yourself. Go to the App Store, Google Play, or download it now at podcast1.com.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
So now we had some time with Stephen Piercy, and we're going to talk to Robert Mason, who has been the singer in Warrant for how many years now?
Since September of 2008.
And I was there when the Robert Mason era of Warrant was born.
Rocklahoma.
I will never forget this as long as I live. Because we all know that as talented and as beloved as Janie Lane was,
yes,
he was a troubled guy, especially in his later years. And Warrant was booked to play Rocklahoma. And it was just after Janie had had that incident, I think it was in Vegas, where he was not all there on stage.
To headline Saturday night at Rocklahoma.
So Warrant was booked to headline a Saturday night at Rocklahoma.
I believe so.
A couple weeks after that incident happened with Janie that was all over YouTube and everything. And I remember standing in the parking lot backstage at Rocklahoma, and Joey Allen is there getting his gear out. And he was really in a knot, because he was not sure. He said, you know, you have no idea what it's like to go out on a stage to do a gig and not know if your singer is going to be all there and be able to do the gig. And he said, we're really concerned, because at that point, Janie had only been in rehab a couple of weeks. They didn't feel it was enough. They didn't know if they were going to be able to get through a full headline set with him and in what condition. And Joey said to me, he goes, you know, we're going to start looking for people backstage in the next few hours that if we have an issue and Janie can't get through the set, can step in and help out.
Yeah.
And while he's telling me that, about
as chance would have
20
it.
Feet away, I see Robert walking through the parking lot, because you were there playing with another band.
Yeah.
And we both kind of looked and said, without even speaking, and Joey just goes,
who's the blonde dude?
Robert!
No.
Get over here. And then you guys had a conversation. You didn't end up singing with the band that night, did you? I don't remember.
No, Janie came in at the literal 11th hour and was able to do the show. But yeah, I did see that. This is hand to God, hand to Starbucks. I could not have told that story better than you just did.
Well, because I was just, I mean, I've known you forever, and we all just looked, and it just kind of clicked, like,
hey,
make sure Robert's close to the stage. What was the conversation? I was not there when Joey had the conversation with you about it. What did he say exactly?
First word was, dude. because we had toured together Lynch Mob had supported Warrant and Arenas in 92 and 93. So that's when we really got to know each other. The brief history is I met Lane when we were recording the Lynch Mob record, living in Los Angeles for, you know, part-time to make that record, as you do. And we became fast friends and hung out a lot during that tour, so I was kind of a legacy. And I hadn't, you know, I'd kept up with a few of them, and Lane.
So you were friendly with James?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Oh, we were like, on tour, we were inseparable, at the expense of the regular band.
Yeah.
Like, I rode a few nights. The Lynch Mob guys, their bus would say, nah, we're taking off, and I would ride to the next city in the Warrant bus. I've done that. So we were actually friends. Joey explained the situation pretty much the way you did. I know. This is an actual, I did say, he did say to me, so, like, how many of our songs do you think you know? And I said, I know probably two. How many times do you need me to sing them? And, I mean, that's honest. Although it was a joke, yeah.
What were the two?
Uncle Tom's and Cherry Pie, probably. Like, that I could actually get through.
Right, that you wouldn't need just some lyrics written out or things like that.
Yeah, they're everywhere. I mean, and I'm making half a joke about it, about a very serious situation. But you're right, he was terrified. I showed up the next morning. I had to go to a sound check quite early, and they were doing an early sound check because they were the closer for Saturday night. After my short line check, I ran over to the main stage and saw everybody else that morning, except for Lane, who had not shown up yet, and I got the same thing. I got, dude, and the same story from Dixon and Turner and Steven. So, you know, that's accurate. After that, I started getting a couple of phone calls here and there from every band member, I think, over the next few weeks. And it turned into the thing where, you know, I think everything, like you said, everything's on YouTube. Lane really wasn't handling being a live singer very well. And eventually around Labor Day or so, Joey called me up and said, man, this is, you know, it's a great call for me to make to you, but it's a horrible phone call for me to make. Do you want to be in a band? I think we've made a decision. And I said, well, let's get together and, you know, date for a minute.
Because it was tough for you. It was a strange decision for you because you called me. It's odd as all get out.
Yeah, right,
you and I had a lot of conversations. I remember vividly you calling me more than one time and saying, hey, I need some help here. I want to run some stuff by you because you had mixed emotions about it.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, it's, you don't want to see any of your friends falling down. I guess that's the, you know, it's the simplest way to put it. But I know that I saw four out of five guys on stage for the right reasons, having fun, and I was a fan first, and we had toured together. There were all these things in the pro column, you know what I mean, as you pro and con your life. And when they called me, they needed a guy, and I'm a guy, you know. And I think as history has turned out, you know, it's been okay. So.
It's been great. I mean, listen, you can be humble about it and say it's been okay, but it's been amazing. I think you've done an amazing job in the band.
Thank you.
You've always been a phenomenal singer and frontman. And
here's your check, Ed.
I'm saying it because I mean it. And I go back with Robert for, I kind of teased about it earlier, but I literally go back to like 30 years ago and Robert on the Jersey Club scene. And then, of course, Robert did a phenomenal record with a phenomenal band, Cry of Love, as well.
Thank you.
The second record from Cry of Love is killer. So you've done some great stuff, but it's great for you after all these years to see you have a real place to hang your hat, put down some real roots, and put your stake in the ground as the singer in this band.
And I've done two records now.
Two really good records, too. Louder, Harder, Faster, which is the new one, and Rockaholic, which was the previous one.
Yeah.
Was that important to you, that your history and Warrant also included original music?
Of course. It adds validity. It allows us to collectively and me individually, you know, stretch your creative muscles. Singing the back catalog is great. And there are fans, I mean, really, really cool fans that stuck with the band, and new ones every day, it seems, and because of, you know, songs on either film soundtracks or video games or whatever, you know, there was a reemergence of that quote-unquote nostalgic music for new fans or the kids of original fans. You know, if you live through it the first time and you have all those memories, that's a great fan.
Right.
But somebody who gets turned on to it and is excited by something that's more than 20 years old is crazy for me to think about. You know, that I get to go up and do my best to energize these people and make them, you know, it's I think the band just is all around having a good time, and it's just an American rock band. You can you can put it in a time period like we talked about last week and, you know, hang a name on it if you want. But come on, man. I'm a singer in a rock band.
Right.
And my main objective is to get up there and just show people by example that they're allowed to have as much fun as we're having on stage.
Right.
And that was the thing I saw, the potential in that band. And that's why they, you know, quote unquote, needed me to do, you know, to do what I do. But like I said, the back catalog, singing those songs that everybody knows the words by heart, amazing. And
what do you,
it's super
what do
fun.
You, what do you like singing the best from the back catalog? What are some of your favorites?
God, I love doing a lot of stuff off Doggy Dog, Hole in My Wall.
You did Hole in My Wall the other night. I was with Warrant weekend, and that was killer hearing you play that in Oakdale.
I love doing that and Machine Gun. I mean, that was the record that I went and toured on the Doggy Dog tour.
Right.
So we would finish Lynch Mob set. I'd go grab a shower, go to catering, run upstairs, and go stand on, you know, stage left or stage right, usually stage left in Monitor World or whatever, and watch the Warrant set. So isn't life weird?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, there's just, Janie was such a great songwriter and a great frontman as well. I do my damnedest every night to do that as faithful justice as I'm able. I like doing the new stuff too. I like that challenge of having a song that people perhaps haven't heard ever and in one listen have them hopefully, you know, at the very least, you know, banging their head a little bit, at the very most screaming the chorus along with me at the end.
Yeah. You talked about the fact that you had a relationship with Janie Lane and you were in the band obviously for a few years before he passed away. Did you ever have any did he ever comment to you or did you have any interactions with him while he was alive and you were the singer?
Do you know the answer to this already and you're just
saying no, this honestly,
it's your
I don't.
Radio show, Ed?
No, I honestly don't.
Well, one thing, there was,
I imagine, yeah, it might have been weird.
Oh, understatement.
Right.
For 400, thank you. Wow.
But I don't know, maybe, you know, like I talked about, you know, I'll give you an example on that. I'll give you a parallel example.
Okay.
Chester Bennington told me that when he was in Stone Temple Pilots, he was a huge fan and a friend of Scott Weiland's.
Yeah.
And when he got the gig, when of course Scott was still alive as well, they still maintained a relationship, but it certainly was a little bit different.
Of course.
So that's obvious, but I'm wondering how it was for you.
I think Janie had a certain reticence and regret. I don't know if those are even the right words to use at this point, but I know he had, like you said, his demons. He was, in one way, I had his blessing, and we did speak. In another way, I know he went back and forth with, you know, regret and a little bit of, it's hard, feelings is too short to wait to explain it. But for the sake of that, there was probably a little of that as well.
Right.
You know, there are things, it's funny, the guys in my band are way too classy to sling mud, and to their credit, will never tell, you know, like dirt stories. I'm a firm believer in that. Keep it, you know, keep it in the family and out of the press, and every little thing doesn't need to be just talked about.
Right.
But I will say that there were moments where it was tense between us. There was a show, you remember the show because you talked about it on on the TV show or on radio, probably.
It might have been that metal show. I remember.
With Great White, where he was actually filling in for Jack.
Yeah.
When Jack was sick and playing on the same bill with us. And supporting Warrant.
Right. Yeah, that's a...
So seeing him at Soundcheck was a little tense.
Yeah, yeah, I would think so. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting spot. I understand all sides of it. People talk about, you know, I remember, and I've told this story before with that metal show, I was put in a tough spot because at the time, you had just released your first album with Warrant. Rockaholic had come out. And you guys were obviously hitting me up to come on that metal show to promote the record, as one would. And on the other side, Janie was out doing whatever he was doing.
Yeah.
And his camp was hitting me up to come on. So I brought both scenarios to the network, to VH1 Classic at the time, and they said, well, let's have Janie Lane on, because of course the guy whose face is on all the videos, that's where they went, and that was the direction they chose to go in. Now the following season we ended up having you on,
and Dixon and I came on,
and you and Jerry came on,
Lemmy. I mean, it was an amazing show. I had fun.
Here's the thing.
Did I ever say thank you for that?
No,
thank you for
that. You're ungrateful prick, you.
This interview is over.
That's it. Cut this guy's mic. But no, but my point is, where I was going with that is that in retrospect, that was a tough call for me to make, because you guys are all friends and I don't make that call. And I know you had a new record to promote, but the network made the final decision. In retrospect, it turned out to be a great decision, because if it would have went the other way, Janie passed away 2 weeks after we did that TV interview with him.
Yep.
So if it had gone the other way, we would have never have had him on. And I know I've heard from his family and his fans that they were really appreciative that we had him on and showed him respect during that show. So it all ended up working out in the end. But yeah, it was, I imagine it's a little different. As tragic as it is, and I've said this to you, as tragic as it is that he's gone, it's a different scenario, and I'm sure you feel this, as a guy replacing somebody, when that guy is, the aura of that guy is still hovering and he could potentially come back and they could still do the reunion play.
Right.
And when the person's no longer alive and that element is lifted out of the equation, I think it makes it a little easier for guys like you.
You agree? In that aspect, of course. You know, that's an obvious, you know.
Because fans can't be saying, oh, it's not, you know, the guy's got, you got to bring this guy back. We hear that all the time about every band in the world. They got to reunite with this guy. I do it. I mean, we're all guilty of it because it's how we feel as fans.
But the people that still say, I'm a Bon Scott guy, not a Brian Johnson guy. Like, people will say that.
Yeah.
Forever and ever, amen. They just will.
Yeah. And then there's people in the world of AC/DC, they don't even know who Bon Scott is.
Exactly.
I mean, they started with You Shook Me All Night Long.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
They have no clue. Hey, one other thing I want to hit you with.
Yeah.
Dee Snider's supposed to be coming soon. But for people that don't know, another little part of Robert Mason's history that's really interesting is Robert Mason.
I paint, I sculpt, I write poetry.
Robert Mason was on tour with Ozzy Osbourne.
The one and only.
As a backing man behind the curtain singer.
Yes.
The Osmosis Tour?
That even now gets laughs out in your audience here.
There is somebody chuckled at it. I don't know why that's funny. Because I think it's much better. I've said this many, many times.
Ma'am, stop laughing.
If you need help live, whether it's backing vocal, lead vocal, whatever, I think it's much better to have a human being doing it than what so many bands today, which is running tracks and machines and loops and all that sort of stuff and fake recordings. So talk about that experience. That was Joe Holmes, the guitar player on that show?
Yes, it was the Osmosis record that Zach had recorded, and then it was Dean Castronova on drums on the record. And Dean had started the tour, but Joe Holmes was hired to be the guitar player. So when I got on the okay, I'll tell the
Joe
story.
Joe Holmes is a beast of a guitar player. God. Super underrated in the history of Ozzy because he didn't do a studio record.
Sweetheart of a guy and a weapon on guitar. You're right. And my Starbucks buddy every morning, just like Trujillo. When Trujillo got the band, was like my go-to, find a boxing gym or something to go work out.
Yeah, yeah.
So Oz, to his credit, Oz and Sharon decided that in order to not use any, like you said, anything canned or pre-recorded. Now, this is 95. So remember, sampling and everything wasn't what it was.
Technology may not have even been there.
John Sinclair was our keyboard player. I know you know who John is. John had tried to fire off a couple of samples, but you know, it's anybody who understands that knows it has its limitations. So by the time I got in the band, Sharon calls and says, look, he really wants you to sing live vocals because we knew some of the same people in common. She called around a couple of studios, Keith Olsen, Max Norman, blah, 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 producers, and my name came up a few times. So the next call was to my house, and she said, look, we're going to be gone for a year. You know, it's this whole world tour. Will you come and do it? And there are very few people that I would go do that for. Honestly, I hate to be sound like a jerk to say that, but there are very few, and he's one of them. And I said, you know, come on, when am I not going to do that? Yes. A couple of weeks later, I was on a plane to Copenhagen or Stockholm or something like that. I walked in, did the first sound check.
What are you being asked to do? Are you being asked to cover lead vocal, sing choruses, do everything, be there on mic the whole time? You're told you're not going to be seen. You're in a booth or something in the back?
I wasn't told that initially, but when I got, you know, in country, when I got to camp,
Whatever you do, do not let this guy be seen.
Look at the guy. He's hideous.
They put me behind. If you've ever watched a concert, you see the big sub-bass cabinets off to your left.
You were
right.
In a bass cabinet?
I was behind them. These are the jokes, kids. I don't dance much. It's radio. They put me behind the subs. They built me a little ISO booth and a monitor. You know, they asked me, what do you want to sing through? What do you want to listen through? You know, I was like, I'm easy. Give me
so if Ozzy was having a bad night, are you on the lead vocal the whole time?
I was hired as a background vocalist. Ed, did Ozzy know?
Did Ozzy know?
That's not even right. Of course he knew.
Who's this blonde guy in the bass cabinet singing with a microphone?
Who's the blonde geezer?
The blonde geezer.
What's going on here?
Did you have much interaction with Ozzy?
Oh, all the time.
You did?
First sound check. Okay, I think it was Copenhagen. So I fly in, you know, from Phoenix. Three flights and no sleep, and I go to sleep for a few hours. I have a wake up call, and a car picks me up on the other side of the world, and I race the arena, and I walk in. They make me a laminate. You know, you take your picture, you know, a little Polaroid back in the day, and put you on a laminate. And I see Ozzy's like, I get a call from Sharon. She says, you don't have to sing the first night if you don't want to. I was like, I kind of know all the songs. I'll do it. It's like, well, okay, but you're here, and it's like an hour before showtime. Just watch the show and enjoy. So I did that. I watched the show and I enjoyed. All right, Ed, you want breaking news that no one's ever heard before? I didn't even say this in the LA Weekly, I think, interview last year. That this is the first time I ever
talked
about this.
Trunk Nation exclusive. Here we go.
This is serious and no bullshit. I'm backstage. I see Randy Castillo, who I know and love for years anyway. I'm like, hey, what's up, brother? I meet Geezer Butler, who's on the tour at the time. I'm like, what? I'm on stage with half a Black Sabbath. Then I get told I'm not on stage. That's not the joke. All right, that is the joke. But I walk in and they make me a little booth and I get a call. I get called into production. I pick up a phone and it's Sharon. She says, I'll paraphrase, Robert, I know we're gonna pay you for the week. I'll pay you double. It turns out everything's gonna work out. Everything's fine. We don't need you basically, and we're gonna. This is honest to God. I had just flown from Phoenix. Phoenix, St. Louis, LaGuardia, Stockholm, Copenhagen. All in one shot. Got off a plane, slept 3 hours, woke up. I'm at my first show. She's sending me home. Honest to God. And I said, Sharon, and I'm like, you know, like I said, no sleep, and I have a lot of East Coast attitude on me right now. And I said, Sharon, I just flew all this way. Pay me or not, let me do one gig. If I don't do tonight, I'll watch the show. I'll do exactly as you ask. Let me talk to Oz in the morning. Let me do sound check. If you honest to God don't want me, let me know tomorrow. Will you do that? And I didn't get a straight answer from her. I was okay, well, and I thought I was going home. I hung up the phone. I walk in, and clearly, I'll be dead honest, I'm despondent.
Sure.
And I look and see, and I see Randy. Randy's like, brother, what's going on? I was like, I think I just got the TH, the ticket home. Like, I don't know, am I taking a bus?
I've never heard that before.
Come on.
Is that tour lingo when
yes.
you fire from a band? The
yes.
TH.
That is when you've been very, very
D.
bad on
tour. D. Snyder's given people the TH before, I can tell. We're going to ask D.
You get very
in a minute, we're going to get D. Snyder in here. Or maybe D's been given the TH. I don't know.
No, come on now. He's admiring the art in the House of Blues. Leave the guy alone. My God. So Randy looks at me and goes, fuck no. And that's a direct quote from, you know, my
the late
friend,
Randy Castillo.
Late
yeah,
Randy Castillo. He walks in. He's like, right now, you and me, we're going to see the boss. I'm like, all right. I walk in. I see Ozzy. He's like, hey, man. He's like, hey, Randy explains it because I didn't even know what to say to the guy. First thing out of Ozzy's mouth is, fuck no. Can you stay? I'm like, I'm in. I'm staying. I was like, and exactly what I said. He said, do sound check tomorrow. Hang out tonight. Enjoy the show. I'll talk to you after. And after, we spoke for a minute, and he said, okay, well, I mean, you are here. Let's do sound check. We did sound check the next day. We did one song. He looks at me, two thumbs up. He goes, you're in, and I'm done. And I was there for the next year.
Amazing. A year with Ozzy, Behind the Curtain, Robert Mason. That's the title of your book, Behind the Curtain with Ozzy. A year behind the curtain with Ozzy.
He's an old man behind
the
curtain.
Oh, my God. Well, listen, man, amazing stories. Robert's history is incredible. Great singer. Check out the Second Cry of Love record, the stuff he's done with Lynch Mob. If you want to pull some YouTube videos, maybe you'll hear him in the Ozzy. You won't see him, but you may hear him a little bit.
I hear there are a few.
I'm sure there are. And, of course, currently fronting Warrants, two great records out, and the current one is called Louder, Harder, Faster, which has just come out. Check it out. And always playing somewhere. Warrant is always playing. As a matter of fact, a show in Tulsa you and I are both doing October 22nd. IDL Ballroom has just been announced. And
the Vermont show.
Vermont show, which is coming up. Shrindom, which is September 16th in Irisburg, Vermont. Robert and I are, like, on tour together. It's but in all honesty, whenever we're doing gigs.
Separate hotel rooms, though.
Yes. When I see Warren on the bill, I'm my boy's going to be there. We're going to hang.
If I put the dedication on this 8x10 of yours, will you just sign it no matter what I say?
Yes.
Because I'm having this sucker framed to put in my house.
Right, whenever you want, I'll sign it. There you go. That's the deal. All right, listen, we got to take a break. We're late for a break. Dee Snider is standing by, and he is going to be our headliner closing act today. Last but certainly not least, Dee Snider is joining us for a few minutes here. Coming right back with Dee from the House of Blues in Houston.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, have you guys been watching Leah Remini, Scientology, and The Aftermath? It is a riveting show. A&E's Emmy-nominated groundbreaking docuseries, Leah Remini, Scientology, and The Aftermath. It's back for season number 2 with all new episodes every Tuesday at 9, 8 Central on A&E. Leah Remini's show, Scientology and The Aftermath, follows Leah along with high-level former Scientology executives and church members. They delve deep into shocking stories of abuse, heartbreak, and harassment experienced by those who have left the church and spoken publicly about their experiences. This season, Leah continues her quest to give a voice to the victims of the Church of Scientology. This series also explores accounts of former members whose lives have been significantly impacted by the church's practices. Leah Remini is helping people take action, turning survivors into fighters, revealing truths, and seeking justice. Catch up on episodes of on the A&E app and AETV.com. Leah Remini, Scientology in the Aftermath, Season 2, Tuesdays, 9, 8 Central on A&E.
Hey, my name is James Petragallo.
I'm Jimmy Wisman.
Please join us every single Tuesday for Crime in Sports.
So fun.
You like sports?
You don't have to.
Let's just set up a context and find out what an idiot did wrong. What
I
do
like
you say?
It. I'm in.
We're going to do that each and every week. We take an athlete, we break him down, we make fun of everything he's ever done.
Yeah. But in order to do that, we have to build up and tell you all about their career and get you to what, James?
To grace. That's and then right. Watch them fall from grace.
Who
as they inevitably
like
do. Join us. Big criminals, small criminals, sports you've never heard of, doesn't matter. It's the crime, it's the comedy, it's such a good time. Join us every Tuesday for Crime in Sports.
You can join us every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on all Apple products.
Find us every Tuesday and laugh at people.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, one more interview to get on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast. These all took place last Thursday in Houston, Texas at the House of Blues. They were all done live for my SiriusXM volume show. And one of the guys that I was able to wrangle and join me for this, who's always a blast to talk to, is Dee Snider, who was completely entertaining, as he always is. We began the conversation because I had been talking to Dee about Kevin Cronin of REO Speedwagon, who was just on my radio show, and we received, the REO guys received a Diamond Award for their High Infidelity album. Diamond constitutes 10 million copies of an album sold. And we begin talking to Dee about the fact of a record ever going Diamond, and who knew Dee actually has a Diamond record or a song on a Diamond record. So that's kind of how the conversation begins.
You know what I have a Diamond record for?
Stay Hungry?
No.
How much did Stay Hungry do?
5 million.
So you're halfway there.
Yeah. No, I have it for Celine Dion. These Are Special Times.
Wait, what did Celine do?
The album I have a Christmas song on.
Yeah.
That I wrote for my wife and Celine recorded.
Yeah.
It's the biggest selling holiday album in the history of recorded music.
What? Wow, it's good to be Dee Snider.
It is. I bought the house, but I wish it was for something cooler than the magic of Christmas Day, you know? So, well, but I'll take it.
You'll take it. You'll take it for sure. I mean, That's amazing. There's a little fun fact. I didn't know you have a song on the Celine Dion record.
Yeah, my wife asked me to write her a Christmas song years ago when I told her she was insane. A metal! She said, ah, you're a classically trained countertenor. You can do it. So for Christmas, I wrote her a Christmas song, and I couldn't even sing it. It was out of my range. And one of the engineers in the studio said, can I have a copy of this? I said, yeah, sure. A number of years later, that engineer is now a Grammy Award-winning producer, Rick Wake, and he calls me up. He said, are you sitting down? And I said, yeah, why? He goes, Celine Dion wants to record your wife's Christmas song. I said, does she know who wrote it? And he says, I haven't told her yet. I said, do not tell her Satan wrote a Christmas song. Just put it on the fucking album. And is it 14 million copies later?
Wow.
We call my house the house St. Celine built.
Wow.
Thank you, St. Celine.
That, so, honestly, I mean, not getting into your personal finances, but if you ever a song, you have one song on the record, right?
Yeah.
So you have one song, you're the sole songwriter of
yeah.
it? Okay, and it's on a record that sold 10 million copies.
14 million.
14 million.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the estimate return on that for that one
song? I told you, we call our house the house St. Celine built. Isn't that enough?
But is it a bungalow or is it a big-ass house?
It's a big-ass house.
Wow, that is a beautiful thing. Have you had any of your...
And anybody say one bad word about Celine Dion.
Yeah, exactly. Have you had any of the other songs that you've done? I mean, you wrote all the songs in Twisted Sister. Yeah. Have any of those things gone on to pop up in places you wouldn't expect? I know a lot of stuff's in commercials and stuff.
Yeah, okay. SpongeBob SquarePants. Okay, I'll tell you that story. I get a call from my managers. I've got a couple bunch of stories like that. My manager says, listen, there's a SpongeBob movie coming out, and they want to do I Want to Rock, but they want to change the lyrics and the words to Goofy Goober Rock. I said, are you fucking kidding me, man? This is my fucking music. My life is... How much are they going to pay me? Oh, fuck yeah. They want me to sing it? I'm a Goofy Goober Rock! Hell yeah! I had like 3 kids in college at that time. Damn. At the time, that woman's premenopausal medication, it's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they wanted to
one.
Use it. We're not going to take it.
What about the...
I said, give me something I can hold on to. Well, it helps vaginal dryness. I'm in! Because I'm totally against vaginal dryness.
Literally and figuratively.
Figure, yes. I think we can all agree on one thing. Men and women alike, we are against vaginal dryness. And if you're a woman listening to this right now going, well, I really don't care, give it a few years, honey. You'll be shooting dust out of your pooter. You'll be begging for this shit.
What song did they use?
Don't you dare judge me.
Dee, what...
We're not going to take it. And his mom's in his highways.
Wait a minute. They
shaking their fists going, we're not going to take
it.
Yeah.
They use we're not going to take it as an anthem against vaginal dryness?
Yeah, and other premenopausal issues, of course.
Holy Christ.
I'm doing God's work, Eddie. You're welcome.
Everyone in the audience is saying thank you.
You're welcome.
What was the carpet one, the cleaner?
Stanley Steamer. I fucking put on the rig for that.
You were
again, they told me, they said, what? They want me to do a Stanley. How much? Oh, fuck yeah. Where's Stanley Steamer?
Oh,
I'm a whore, but I'm an expensive whore. Let's keep that. Be very clear about
easy,
that.
Easy, but not cheap.
That's right.
Oh, my gosh. Did you ever envision when you wrote those songs that they would be turning into what
Dude,
you just said?
If you told me that in 1984, that any of this shit was going to happen, I literally would have punched you in the face. Take it back, I'm metal. Christmas song, I don't have no fucking Christmas song. God bless us, everyone.
And the Twisted Sister Christmas record is now
a perennial
favorite. Absolutely. Well, let me ask you what's going on now in the world of Dee Snider, because I find this very fascinating. You put Twisted Sister to bed, 40 and fuck it. That was the end of it, 40 years.
Yeah.
You ended it a year and a half ago, about. And I and a lot of other people took that
was
as...
Was it a year and a half ago?
Yeah, probably. More than a year and a half ago. Danny, a year and a half, year and 8 months?
November. It was November of last year.
No, really?
Yeah, it was November of last year.
Okay, so a year and change.
In Monterey.
Okay.
What's, guys?
Oh, wait, it's not?
I know, you were told there'd be no math. Okay, it's November, this is
whatever
August.
Whatever it was.
Okay.
Twisted Sister to Bed.
And I released a solo album instantaneously.
Yeah, I'm saying to myself, Dee's going to just, you know, go do other things. You've done so much other stuff in your career. And then, boom, there's a record, and you're out playing solo shows. I saw your band a couple weeks ago in Ohio.
Yeah.
You just announced a date at the Wellmont in Jersey, I know. You're out there doing stuff. So what's going on?
Basically, the level of intensity that I performed at with Twisted Sister, which we've talked about many times,
yes,
I had to stop while I could still deliver that, before I could no longer deliver that. The headbanging, the thrashing, all that energy, and you once, and I've quoted you many times, you said, D, you painted yourself in the corner, where Alice always seemed like a crotchety old dude.
Yes.
Saying, you know, I'm 18, and he's crawling around the stage. That works great for a 72-year-old dude now. But what I did does not work for a 62-year-old. I mean, it's just too fucking hard to stay in the shape. He's talking about the six-pack club. Just keep that going. Just got harder and harder. I said, I want to stop while people are still smiling and not looking at me saying, oh, remember when he was good? So everything I'm doing now, there's no more headbanging involved. I mean, my neck just about had it, you know, and with Twisted, I had to stop headbanging. And as long as I'm on stage with Twisted Sister, I just could not perform with that band and just not want to feel I had to thrash. So I felt if I stepped out of that, I don't know, if it just at least I could say, hey, I'm doing some new things, I'm trying some new things, and I'm not in Twisted Sister, I'm Dee Snider now. And people seem to be, I'm looking at my agent and co-manager over there, people seem to be cool with it, and I'm cool with it, because for some reason, without having that big TS hanging over my head, I don't feel this obligation to get out there and just start doing that. You know?
Well, see, that's the thing. That's what I found interesting about it, because that's what I meant when I said that you painted yourself in a corner, because Dee Snider is synonymous with a lot of things, writing great songs and being still a powerhouse vocalist, but maybe more so than anything people mention when you bring up the name Dee Snider is the stage performance, is the guy...
Inspirational to me.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, to many.
For real.
To many. One of the great frontmen. And thank you. Yeah. Got a golf clap for you here. In
I appreciate it. Those who aren't clapping haven't seen me, but you missed it. You missed it.
But that's great. The thing is like you don't want to be one of those guys. And I've always said this, and I really believe it. As much as I love artists, as much as I love these musicians that I grew up with, I would much rather see them end respectfully than say, oh my God, he can't do it anymore. He can't sing. He can't move. It's a joke.
It's the boxer that goes out as world champ. As
I didn't want
to
have that Mike Tyson moment where you're crawling around all fours looking for your mouthpiece.
Yeah.
You know, I'll never forget that image in my head. That's not the lasting image. I never want that. There are those film footage of Babe Ruth playing with, I don't know who they traded him to, but when he left the Yankees, and he's literally walking around the bases because he can no longer run at all. So, I mean, so I did not want to ever have that happen. And now, like I said, separate from Twisted Sister, if people are coming down and going, well, he's not as intense as he was, I'm hopeful that people go, well, that was Twisted Sister. You know, someone said, I wish I could remember, I think it was Wednesday, Wednesday 13, right, for one of those rock magazines, one of those guys.
Maybe.
Yeah, one of those guys does, and if it's not Wednesday. And he said, when a reunion show is good, it makes you feel young again. But when it's bad, it makes you realize how old you've gotten.
Yeah.
And I, when I, before Twisted reunited, I saw UFO. So that was like 2000, 1999, when Michael Schenker was with him.
He was back from 95 to like 99.
Okay.
Yeah.
So right around that time. And I was like a freaking kid. I was fighting my way to the front. I felt like I was in high school.
Was it at the Limelight?
It was at the Limelight.
I was there too.
So they look great. They play great.
Yeah.
And I even followed. I said, Suzette, we're going to go to the next town to see him. And she said, what are you, fucking 16? I said,
you were.
I went. I had to go see the next show because they made me. And so when Twisted reunited, I said, that's how I want people to feel. I don't want them to ever look up there and go, damn, we've gotten old.
Yeah.
You know. And I just had to, after 40 years, and I love the guys at Twisted. Still friends, and we ended on a great note, and I love those guys and the legacy, and with the release of We Are Twisted Fucking Sister, where people got to know the road, that how hard we fought for where we got, I just felt it was a good time to
to end it. You know?
It's by the way, if you guys have not seen that documentary, it is a must watch. We are Twisted Fucking Sister. You can get it on Netflix, whatever. And I'll tell you, a guy like me, I mean, I've lived in New Jersey my whole life. I remember hearing the stories about Twisted Sister on the club scene. I just had a conversation with Mark Tornillo on this show a couple days ago about the TT Quick days and him saying how, you know, the bills that he shared with you guys and yep. Twisted oh, back yeah. in the day. And it was legend, and I was just on the cusp of being too young to have made the shows and seen it.
Right.
So having that documentary out to really put you, because people talk about the club scene now, and like Mark said the other day, he goes, no. There is no scene now anywhere close to where it was when Twisted Sister and White Tiger and yeah. TT Quick and this scene on the
just
in the
to
East
hear
Coast.
The ads on radio.
Yeah,
as a kid, ours.
Yeah, it was a different time, man. 18-year-old drinking age. You got that prime rock audience sneaking into bars. And we played with 1,000 to 4,000 people a night, 5 nights a week.
I remember during the day in Seaside Heights, walking up on the boardwalk and seeing at the Chatterbox, seeing Twisted Sister oh, yeah. on the marquee, and trying to look through the big glass doors in there, being too young to get
me
in the bar during the
Box
day.
Hero out in the rain. Yeah. No, I mean, my favorite thing is I get people who very sort of like carefully come up to me and go, I just want to say, I was never really a fan of your band, but I saw your documentary, and they'll shake my hand. Just for this, just to, what you guys went through, how hard you fought, you have my respect.
Yeah.
And that alone, you don't got to be a fan of the band to watch that video and get something out of it. That was the inspiration, not the video, the documentary, from the guy, documentarian. So when he heard the story of the 10 years the band was together before the world found out about us in 84... Where the fuck you going, man? Sit your ass down. he wants to get better sound in the bathroom. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. And glory, look for the glory hole. Old Mo in the back. He's got no teeth, but it's beautiful.
But that's a great point, because the documentary ends just before the band breaks. Usually documentaries tell the story of the big multi-platinum record. This tells the story of everything before that, which I think is incredibly interesting. We got to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll have a few more minutes left in the show, a few more minutes with Dee Snider. I want to talk a little bit more with Dee about what he's doing right now, because he did release this record, We Are the Ones. He is out touring with a new band, and we'll get a little bit about that and a few more things. If we have time, I'll squeeze in a call. Coming right back with a little bit more here from Houston with Dee Snider.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Ah, yes, True Car. I've told you guys about them many, many times. They are awesome. When you're looking to buy a car, what are you looking for? You want to make sure you get real pricing on actual inventory, right? A lot of times, this isn't the case. People configure cars online, and then they only find out later that they're not available. Waste of time that is, right? True Car gets you real pricing on actual inventory. It's not pricing offered by True Car, but pricing from an actual dealer, and not just any dealer, but a True Car certified dealer. This is a carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. Next, TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the same car you're looking for, and now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. There's over 13,000 TrueCar Certified Dealers nationwide, and you will work directly with a TrueCar Certified Dealer contact. TrueCar users, well, they're more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar Certified Dealers. And TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So, when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features, they're not available in all states.
Hey, it's Steve Austin. Have you checked out the Steve Austin Show? I got family-friendly episodes on Tuesdays, and I let it all fly on Unleashed every Thursday. So get to podcastone.com or iTunes to listen and subscribe. And that's the bottom line, because I said so.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
So we're talking a little bit off the air with Dee for a second here. A couple things to catch up on before we have to wrap up the show. So this band, you have a new band as well. Tell everybody about your band, because you've got, I met her the other day in Houston. You've got a female bass player, right?
Yeah, Tanya.
From Germany or
Yacko
something?
Yeah, I call her TKO. No, she's Irish.
Irish, okay.
Tanya O'Callaghan. And she, when I walked into the room, they said, we got a girl bass player. And as, I'll quote my wife on this one, because she said, I don't, who's making that sound? There's this girly girl up there on stage, and I hear thunder coming out of her amp. And she plays like thunder, but she looks like a girl, as opposed to sometimes you get, I'm not saying all girls in bands, but some that are on the borderline. We got a chick on bass.
We can talk about this.
Pat? I wasn't sure.
Not that Robert wrong. Mason just put coffee through his nostrils.
Not that there's anything wrong
with
it. But
D. Snyder just did that for me, so I'm privileged. Thank
from
you.
The guy who wore women's clothing. I can say things like that. But anyway, yeah, so I wanted my new record, We Are the Ones, is a more mainstream rock record, drawing a lot of, I have a lot of punk influences that people may or may not realize, and it's driven from there a lot. And I put together a whole new band, and I wanted the band to be striking. I didn't want people to see a bunch of dudes dressed in black with long hair that looked like they might have been in Twisted Sister at one point. So the band was, I had a peacock on one guitar for a while, another guy wearing a derby, and this girl, Tanya, with blonde and black hair, wearing a dress and playing like thunder. And so I got some great great musicians, and I've been out doing that. And I do, you know, and live, it's tough. I go out there, I do 5 or 6 new songs a set, which ain't easy.
Well, because in the past, you've talked about, and even on your own radio show, I believe, you've talked about the fact that it's very difficult to get people to care about new music classic bands. You were outspoken about that at one point.
Oh, I'm outspoken on stage. I open the show, and I go, I'm here. I've got new. I have a new album. I'm going to play some of your old favorites. I got some surprises. I don't play new music. But I'm not telling you motherfuckers when I'm doing a new song, because the minute I say it's a new song, you got to go take a piss. And it's like, and I saw Elton John talking about this, not in those terms, but he said he was nervous about the new tour because he had new music. And he says, the minute you say, here's a new one, the faces just go blank.
And the bathroom line backs
and the,
up.
And people just say, hey, Bobby, you need a burger? I'm going to get a couple of beers. I said, I see you motherfuckers streaming out of the place. So I don't even announce the new song. That's how I start the set. I say, I'm not even telling you when a new song's coming up. Fuck you.
So somewhere between we're not going to take it and I want to rock, you might get these two songs. Like you should almost go into a new song and say, just so you know, right after this, I'm going to play Under the Blade. So
that's good. Yeah, I'm a good set writer. So I hit them with something new, and then I, you know, give them something familiar they know. Then hit them with something new and something familiar they know.
And you did a brilliant take, I'm sure many people have heard it by now, but a totally different take on We're Not Going to Take It. That's on the record.
Yeah.
Which was originally done for charity, right?
No, it actually wasn't. I actually, when we were in the studio, the idea came up to do something just that would show the rawness in my voice, because my voice is still strong, but man, I got some fucking miles on it. And when you hear it just stripped away the music, you just hear this, the voice of the ages, you know, I've been through some shit, you know. So we did this stripped version of We're Not Going to Take It. And before it was released, Chris Angel called me to help him out with his children's, he's fighting, his 2-year-old has leukemia, and he started a children's fund to fight children's cancer. And I said, hey, you know, I got this version of We're Not Going to Take It, I think might be good for this cause. And I sent it to him, and he said, dude, can we do a video? This is just so amazing. And the video went viral with millions and millions of hits. And I do that live, but I go into the regular version of We're Not Going to Take It. I also have this song called So What, which is on the 10th song on the record. And I end, it's a very stripped down song. It's the last song I do over the night. And so it's just, and it is just, for all the people who are so fucking sick and tired of what's going on in this fucking world. It just seems to get worse every fucking day, and I'm 62 years old, and I'm still screaming about it. I've been screaming about it my whole fucking life. You know, I'm not one of these people that this world sucks, but I'm one of these people that I'm not going to fucking go quietly. I'm not going to shut the fuck up. Fuck you. I am here. Pay fucking attention. And I've always wanted to be a voice for the masses, because the masses, a lot of times, their voices aren't heard. I say the true silent majority is the majority. Yeah. And they need a We're Not Going to Take It. to as a battle cry so they can raise their fist in the fucking air and get pissed off. And this new song I've got on the record called So What, and I did a video as well by the Dakota Pipeline. I went there when that was going on.
Right.
And that's another song like that, so check that out. But you wanted to talk about Jamie Josta.
Well, we got about 2-3 minutes. First of all, you talked about Jamie Josta approaching you to possibly do a hardcore album.
Yeah, I say hardcore. You know, you said that's not hardcore. He wants me to do like a record like Halford's first record, solo Resurrection.
It's kind of like a power metal record.
Yeah, power metal. And he said, look, if I want to get Zakk Wylde, I want to get all the people in this community, the true heavy hitters, to write songs for Dee Snider and have you voice them. And I said, all right. I like a fucking challenge. To me, that's a challenge. Something new. You know, they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over, hoping for a different result. That was 40 years of Twisted Sister. I loved it, but it was never going to change. I had to break away from there to do something new, to do something different. So I said, Jamie, let's go.
So is it's in production, or he's looking at it?
He said, I'm challenging you. I said, I accept the challenge. What's next? He said, all right. Now, so right now he's scrambling because he thought I'd say no.
He's never going to agree to
if
this.
He'll never go, what? Right. Okay.
If anybody has learned anything in the decades of Dee Snider, it's that you don't challenge him to anything.
Don't dare this
just
guy.
Just ask Paul Stanley. Robert Mason brought up the book,
Killing Me
Shut
Today.
Up and Give Me the Mic.
Yes, big fan.
Which I read as well, which is a great book. Would you like to do another book at some point?
You know what? Somebody said, what about Shut Up and Give Me the Mic was kind of the same deal as We Are Twisted Fucking Sister, which it was sort of the story of a young man trying to make it and then making it and losing everything and then struggling back to come back. But then everybody said, well, what about now? What about all the things you've been doing since then? Because I kind of stopped after things got back together in the 90s. And I said, well, that's the next book. So I'm not done writing that book. I mean, not living that book, I should say. So I don't know. I'm too busy writing movies and creating TV shows. I've got 4 television shows in production, in development, children's animated show, horror-driven television shows, a rock and roll-driven television show, new screenplays. I got to get the fuck out
House
of here.
House of Hair. You got the whole the radio show.
I'm too busy.
D is the king of all media. second to Stern.
Howard's going to hear this.
Second to Stern.
Out.
Well, my thanks to Dee Snider, who is always a lot of fun. And, man, that was a hysterical conversation from Dee. I mean, so much fun. And, of course, also thanks to Robert Mason and thank you to Stephen Piercy for joining me on what was a really fun radio show. And if you have SiriusXM, maybe you heard the complete thing. And, of course, a fun podcast, too. I hope you guys enjoyed hearing what you heard of it here on the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is, of course, new every Thursday, podcast1.com and on iTunes. And, of course, the radio interviews come from my show on Volume, which is live Monday through Friday on SiriusXM channel 106. And you can hear the show live 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time. It replays every night 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern time. And full shows also on demand on the SiriusXM app. Thank you to Katie Irizarry for putting it all together. Thank you guys for listening. And hey, don't forget, I've got my own store on Amazon. Whenever you shop on Amazon, make sure you go to my storefront, amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. Some of the items I handpicked to put in the store are right there on the homepage. Whatever you're buying on Amazon, start on that page, look at my handpicked items, and go from there. Again, amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk, the official Eddie Trunk store on amazon.com. Thank you for checking that out. All right, social media, at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, eddietrunk.com is the website. See you next Thursday for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
it's me, Brandy Glanville, and my lame producer, Will, who wrote this for me, because clearly we all know I can't write just books, not a paragraph. So I could tell you to listen to my podcast, Brandy Glanville Unfiltered. You have to listen to it. We have tons of fun talking to a lot of different celebrities, comedians, Emmy-nominated writers, reality stars, Teresa Giudice, I can never say it right, and Dorinda Medley, who I love, 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 and we text. And, you know, from Real Housewives of New York, from Jersey, from the Shores of Sunset, at Asa Sultan. So get your act together and download new episodes of Brandy Glanville Unfiltered every Friday on this Podcast One app or Apple Podcasts.